So in this part of the interview, I'd like to talk about pay equity, or just equity in general. And can you just talk to me a little bit about what are some of the larger challenges for Unison?
Well, Unison has a very proud record in terms of fighting for pay equity. It's been part of our union's priority for almost two decades in terms of, you know, being one of the top areas of negotiating priorities. And as I said, our strategy have always been to educate, to negotiate and to litigate. And what we have been doing is trying to negotiate pay system, pay structures that are equality proof. We want to ensure that there's no gender bias, that there's no gender taint in the pay systems, because a lot of pay systems and a lot of pay structures were negotiated in the 40s, in the 50s, in the 60s, the equality legislation in terms of equal pay did not come in until the 60s. And what my union has always been arguing is that they need to come into the 21st century, and because it was a model that was based on looking at male full-time jobs in the labour market. And now we have, in terms of the UK labour market, about 50% of the labour market now consists of women workers. And what we said is that, you know, we want to ensure that there are no gender bias in our pay fixed structures. And that's been the biggest challenge. It's looking at harmonising the pay structures and also removing the equality.
Has there been backlash from within the union itself?
No, there hasn't been backlash. I think a lot of our male colleagues recognise that unequal pay is an injustice to women, and that's the good thing about having a union where you have a very politicized organization where the members understand the issues. It's not about wanting to have a differential with women. It's about recognizing that if you work, you should be paid the rate for the job. That's the key principle that all members recognize, because if women are not paid the same rate as men, or if women are not paid the rate for the job, then what an unscrupulous employer would do is to replace permanent higher paid men with lower paid women. That's the reality of having women on a lower grade. Employers are always looking to cut labor costs. And so if you do not have harmonization of pay and pay equity in the workplace, then men's pay becomes vulnerable, and men's jobs become vulnerable. And we know that there have always been unscrupulous employers. That is the reason why, you know, a lot of private companies want to come into the public sector. They're not coming into the public sector to keep males' wages at the same level. In terms of the public sector, they're coming in because they want to cut labor costs. They want to change the profile of the workforce. They want to change the composition on the workforce from full-time male, female workers being paid the trade union rate and bringing in temporary, part-time, casual workers on a lower rate. And that tends to be, now we have a minimum rate. But then it means that they want workers without paying sick pay and without having to pay pension costs. So it's not in men's interest, you know, for women to be underpaid or for women to be exploited. And all members understand that and support that.
Mm-hmm. And now, I mean, one of the things too with equity is that you've changed the structure of your union so that the membership of all your committees and things reflects your membership. And I'm just wondering, How you arrived at that formula?
Well, yes. Prior to that, what we had was that we had the concept of reserved seats, and women did not actually like having reserved seats. There was a stigma attached to reserved seat, because if you in one of the unions in UP that I came from, there were 5 reserved seats. Now, when 75% of the membership are women, and to give women 5 reserved seats and to hand 32 seats to men, you know, where's the unfairness?
Yeah.
That's the question mark. So women did not like reserved seats because, you know, they felt that it was, you know, it was just offensive to them to have reserved seats. Mm-hmm. They wanted to have a seat in their own right. So what happened is you had de facto had 32 seats were guaranteed for men, and the 5 seats, you know, for 500,000 women competed for 5 seats, which was, you know, which was not the best way of dealing with things. And so there was a lot of disquiet and discontent. Women did not want to go into a new union with reserved seats. They wanted a different formula, and we just looked at what formula applies in politics. In politics, you had proportional representation, and we felt that, you know, perhaps the principle of proportionality and proportional representation would be a very fair formula for the new union, and that's what we adopted.
You must keep a lot of statistics on your membership.
We do. We have a lot of statistics on our membership. We keep membership statistics by gender, we keep by race, we know by you know, age as well. And we know the composition of our members in different categories, in different sectors. We have a comprehensive system of, you know, we have a membership record system where we keep a lot of up-to-date statistics. I gave some information yesterday. We have statistics about the number of equality representatives we have, the number of training courses that we run on equality and others, and also the amount of staff in training we do and the amount of staff in the different positions. And we publish that as part of the TUC quality audit every 2 years.
Wow.
The TUC does an equality audit every 2 years. I've left the information with my colleagues at QP on you know, collective bargaining, but they look at measuring year-on-year progress within the British trade union movement on a whole range of issues to do with gender equality, to do with race equality, LGBT equality, disability equality, age, religion, and all of those areas, so that we can benchmark in the British trade union movement progress that individual affiliated unions are making. It's about demonstrating year-on-year progress in challenging inequality in the labour market and challenging discrimination in the workplace, but also recognising the value of diversity as an important strength for the trade union movement, because workers united will never be defeated. That's what we used to say.
And what do you find having an actually representative group from your union in every committee? What effect has that had on the union as a whole? In terms of the issues that you address?
Well, it has transformed the union in a number of areas, because our union, Unison strategic priorities, the strategic priorities of our union, our objectives, annual objectives, are determined in full consultation with all of the groups and with all of the committees, so that when we agree our annual organization strategic objectives, it includes the aspiration and the collective views of the union collective membership, which is very important. So, for example, if you were to look at our negotiating priorities, objective two, you would see negotiating equality in all areas of the public sector as a key priority. You will see the issue of public sector equality duties as a core priority. You will also see challenging racism as a core priority. You will see gender tackling inequality in terms of pay and gender parity as one of the big issues, equal pay as another issue. If you look at our campaigning objectives, you will have a whole range of issues there. You know, campaigning to keep public services public, that's a very important part of our campaign. Campaigning to protect our members whose jobs have been outsourced into the private sector. The reality is they're providing a public function and they're still part of the public service, and therefore their rights are part of that agenda as well. Work-life balance, childcare, they're key priorities, campaigning priorities. So our campaigning priorities reflect the collective views and the wishes of our members, and so it's developed in consultation with the members, and that's one of the very good reasons for having that level of diversity around the bargaining table. It's a built-in approach. If you have a built-in approach and you take the views of everyone into consideration, it's always better than having a bolted-on approach and people complaining after that they have been left out. And so it's if you build in from the outset the collective views and wishes of the membership, then when you do have your statement agreed, you have ownership, you have buy-in, and you have full support from the membership because they were part of that process. Mm-hmm. And that's what's important, having buy-in and ownership. If the members own the agenda, then they will go and deliver that agenda. Right. They will promote that agenda. Mm-hmm. And so it's the approach you take. If you have an inclusive model, then it does work. And Unison, since its creation in 1993, have increased its membership every year over the last 15 years. Indeed, last year, we increased our membership by over 156,000 members. So that's important.
So it's working.
It is working.
I wanted to talk a little bit just about what's coming up. And I think because you've been with the union movement for so long, you might have some insight into this. I mean, what do you think that the challenges are going to be in the next 20 years? We're moving into a recession right now. In terms of union negotiations and that kind of thing in the union movement, what do you think the challenges are?
Well, I think the biggest challenge for the trade union movement would be responding to the global recession in the next 5 years. Now to the next 5 years, I hope that the recession would finish sooner. Past recessions, lasted for about 2-3 years. The forecast we've heard from the IMF over the last 2 days is that Europe, Japan and the USA are now entering a depression. Now that's that conjures up a very negative and very serious image, because in 1929 we talked about, during that Great Depression time, as I said yesterday, we're talking about unemployment reaching 30%. Now we know that, for example, in most of the industrialized countries, employment is about 10%, no more than about 15%. I think in Canada here, I understand it's 7.2%. But in the last month, unemployment's gone up 129,000 in Canada alone. Mm-hmm. In the UK, we have unemployment rate now of about 2 million in America. We know 3 million people lost their jobs in the last year. Now, unions will have to be part of the solution, and they, I know, will be part of the solution. But I think we need to be in the negotiations with governments in terms of finding a formula that does not just work for bankers, but works for workers and work for our communities and our citizens, because I think that's the big issue. Because unless we have proactive intervention where we can actually give people hope, then you know we can have a very serious challenge. And I think the other point is that a lot of employers are wanting trade-offs between jobs and salary. And I think unions need to be prepared, and the activists and the negotiators need to be prepared on how we're going to deal with those issues. We need transparency. Companies need to open the books, and the banks need to open the books where they've got taxpayers' money on the bailout. Mm-hmm. You know, they've got to say who they've loaned the money to, where the money has gone, and who are the recipients. Because we're having huge foreclosures are taking place at the moment. So there has to be a new form of transparency. Because I don't think people are going to accept that it's their job or a 25% pay cut. You know, because we have to make sure that people are not cynical about what's happening. We have to be realistic. So unions would need to ensure that governments put in place the right procedures, the right regulation, so that we can have honest, open, transparent negotiations about what the real state of companies are vis-a-vis workers.
Do you think that's going to be the new relevancy of unions?
I think unions are important, very relevant in providing an economic solution in terms of what's happening. And so I think unions are more relevant now than ever in terms of being, you know, in the workplace, being at the bargaining table, being at the political table, in actually helping to sort out these issues. Because it's just not on to ask workers, you know, to choose between eating and heating, because that's the reality. You know, if you have a pay cut, you know, and food prices are spiraling, I think oil prices, again, that's going up, then what happens is, you know, you were saying to workers, well, take a pay cut, keep your job. But you take a pay cut, or even if you reduce your hours, you know, the income is not sufficient for you to live on. So you'd have to choose to eat or to heat. Now, we don't want to go into those very dark, deep periods, because what we would see is the onset of poverty. The biggest issue we are facing is pensions at the moment now. In the UK, we've been told there's been a £500 billion write down on pension funds. And that's a very big issue. Unions have to look at how they manage the write down in pensions. Because what employers are saying is that they want people to work longer. They want people to take cuts in the value of their pension now. So it's causing problems for people who and retirees, mm-hmm. and people who now are entitled to their pension. So that's another relevance for unions.
So there's no way for unions to become irrelevant, it sounds like.
I don't think unions have ever been irrelevant. I don't think unions have ever been irrelevant. I think unions have been workers' best friends. And a trade union is your best friend in the workplace. I've always said, you know, we're only a phone call away. It's not just an insurance, proactive in defending and protecting workers' rights, defending workers against the exploitation and abuse of employers' power, and also protecting workers when they need it most. And that's the value of being in a trade union, not just an insurance policy, but, you know, protecting freedom, protecting rights, and also, you know, protecting your future.
Well, thank you for talking to me today.
Oh, thank you very much.